Are you all ready to proceed?
Ready, Your Honor.
All right, if the clerk will please call the case.
The court will now call Jimmy Doyle Roberts, first in the state. And may it come to court, Mr. George Matthews, the Attorney for the Attorney, and Mr. John Matthews, the Attorney for the state.
Mr. Mackey?
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is George Mackey, and I represent Jimmy Doyle Roberts, who was convicted of injury to a child and, or injury to an elderly in this case, and was given 15 years in the penitentiary in a range of punishment from 2 to 20 years. He was almost given the maximum by the jury, a case in which the state really failed to prove any serious permanent injury from the pushing and the fall. A very brief statement of the facts. 73-year-old man by the name of Bobby Petrie entered a Walgreens store, much like many of the Walgreens stores here in town, in design and shape. He was at the cashier's checkout paying for an item, and he was 58 cents less than what he was purchasing. The defendant was behind the counter as a clerk who'd worked there for 9 months, Mr. Roberts supporting his family and himself. A quarrel ensued between the two. There was provocation, there were words said. There were other customers in line. One of the customers provided the 58 cents to Mr. Petrie, and who then paid Mr. Roberts. Mr. Petrie continued to stay around the cashier's place, and words were spoken, and Mr. Roberts asked that Mr. Petrie leave the premises. There's a video with no audio of all the occurrences except for the actual assault, which occurred later on. I think there's a 6 to 7 second gap in the video as to what actually occurred at the time of any shoving or any cane being raised against Mr. Roberts. There were words spoken, the manager came, asked Mr. Roberts to go with him. He went back into the store, past the counter. At that time, the video is very clear. It shows that Mr. Petrie went to the front door but did not exit. At that time, we submitted that Mr. Petrie was actually committing criminal trespass because he came back into the store. And as he came back into the store, he had to go at least 10 yards to get, as the evidence shows, to Mr. Roberts. At that time, the video does not show exactly what happened. However, we contended at trial that the video, because there was a cane in the left hand of Mr. Roberts, or Mr. Petrie, and the cane as the video came about when he was pushed, you could see him falling. He had a cane in his other hand and a package which had changed hands. The altercation occurred. And then at that time, after Mr. Petrie was pushed to the ground, we contended, or at least we wanted to submit evidence to the jury that Mr. Petrie had raised his cane to strike Mr. Roberts, thus giving Mr. Roberts the right to use force against deadly force. Mr. Roberts had no weapon, but I think it's with the evidence that was presented outside the presence of the jury that Mr. Petrie had admitted that to our investigator who went out to serve a subpoena during the middle of trial, that he had indeed raised this cane, and we submit in order to strike Mr. Roberts. Mr. Roberts at that time pushed him to protect himself from imminent bodily injury and serious bodily injury. As one officer testified in the case, if a cane hit someone in the head, they could lose an eye, they could lose teeth, it would fall under the definition of serious bodily injury. So Mr. Roberts did what he did. He did not retaliate with deadly force, as we felt that he probably could have, but did not under the Castle Doctrine. This was a place of business, a place in which a person who was there, there were presumptions in his favor that would entitle him to the issue of self-defense. The statements of our points of appeal was that the court failed to issue an attachment for Mr. Petrie. The state admits that Mr. Petrie was served with subpoena to appear. Mr. Petrie failed to appear. At that time, after a long discussion and argument before the court, we submitted to the court that Mr. Petrie did have disability. This was about 2 years afterwards from the date of June of 2009, that Mr. Petrie did have some disability, and we felt that the court should investigate to find out when Mr. Petrie could come to the courthouse. As a result of all of that and the arguments that ensued presented to the court, the defense asked for an attachment. That is our ground in point one, or our own appeal. Now, the state admits in its brief, very succinctly on page 7, that the three requirements to preserve error when a subpoenaed witness does not appear, that we have met the first two. They argue that the testimony that would have been given by Mr. Petrie was not relevant, nor was it material. We submit that it was both relevant and material, since it gave the jury a chance to judge why Mr. Petrie was pushed down. Mr. Petrie was very clear to our investigator who testified outside the presence of the jury that Mr. Petrie admitted to him that he raised the cane, which he had a walking cane, and raised that cane towards Mr. Roberts. As a result of that, we felt that his testimony would be very relevant, not only in guilt-innocence to determine that there was an issue of self-defense, at least an issue that would mitigate any punishment in this case. The jury never heard the statement of Mr. Petrie that was made to our investigator. Obviously, if Mr. Petrie had appeared, we would have been able to develop other areas, a manifestation of why, of how Mr. Roberts appeared at the time he was confronting a man with a cane about to hit him, that Mr. Petrie would have said yes, he was probably trying to duck, he moved, the manifestations that he was in fear of being hit, and that as a result of that, that would show his state of mind. We were not allowed to do that. In fact, we were instructed that we were not to mention anything that Mr. Petrie had told the investigator. As a result,
Can you respond to the argument that you could have put on all this evidence with your own witness? Aren't you sort of using the right to testify as a sword instead of a shield here?
Well, in any case, I think it can be used as a sword and a shield, and a defendant with a long criminal history, a lot of minor cases, but some serious ones, certainly has a right to invoke his right of self-defense, but not testify, and that the court would have to judge it based on the evidence presented during the trial. Mr. Roberts did not testify, and I don't think that can be held against him in this particular case when there are other witnesses and other evidence that could have been presented, such as Mr. Petrie, as to how he attacked Mr. Roberts. Now, the attachment law, I think, is very clear. 1887, Homan versus State. Homan versus State, and you can follow the line of cases, which I know the court has done, up to Rodriguez and Brita, which we have cited in our brief. They're very clear. It's a matter of right that a defendant, in any case, has a right to present evidence, to present a defense, and to have compulsory service of process, and to ensure that those witnesses will appear. In this case, because Mr. Petrie did not appear and the court did not force him to appear, at that time, substantial rights, obviously of constitutional magnitude, under the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution and also Article 1, Section 10 of the Texas Constitution were violated. Because that constitutional law gives us the right to have witnesses appear so that they can be confronted and cross-examined and their truthfulness and their untruthfulness and their credibility be tested before the jury. As a matter of right under Holman versus State and Rodriguez versus State and the other line of cases which say that an attachment should have been issued, we submit in this case. Since it was not, the gravity of the constitutional error was not harmless, and it obviously impacted not only the guilt-innocence phase for the jury to consider guilt-innocence, but it impacted greatly on the punishment phase. Obviously, if a person can defend themselves against deadly force, but yet cannot prove that in court, even though a witness was available to do so, there is an issue of disability. We felt that the court should have investigated and found out as to whether or not Mr. Petrie, how disabled he was, could he appear? He was in a wheelchair. There was testimony that he was in a wheelchair and that there was disability. We asked the court to take that in consideration. We even proposed alternative means, which are probably unheard of in a criminal case, that we were ready, and we asked the court, if the court will not issue the attachment, we would like to take the deposition of Mr. Petrie. It would not have taken much time to have done so and present it to the jury. We went that far in so doing. But under the law of attachments on a subpoena, a peace officer must serve the attachment, or at least go out and serve the writ of attachment to bring the witness in. In this case, that was not done. The court suggested that our investigator, who was appointed by the court, a private investigator licensed by the state, bring him in. I submitted to the court that we just simply could not do that since he was not a peace officer, and that the liability issues would have been too great to do so. And the law, the statutory law on the issue of attachment, is that a peace officer must serve the attachment, obviously, to force someone to come in. As a result, the issue of self-defense was not presented to the jury, and the constitutional error, which made it certainly not harmless, was that the argument of the state's counsel was very clear. The almost exact quote in final argument, which is in the brief, was that Mr. Petrie threatened him in no way and was not aggressive in any manner, and that Mr. Roberts all of a sudden just pushed him to the ground, causing bodily injury to an elderly person. As such, the compounding of this error was taken advantage of by the state, in that we could not present that Mr. Petrie raised that cane in anger against Mr. Roberts. The second point of error is that there was a continuance which we requested. I think in all of these cases, when this comes up, we ask the court to consider whether or not we could have some time to find out from a doctor just how disabled Mr. Petrie was. We were not allowed to do that. We felt that the court had a responsibility to check into it. There were medical records introduced which showed that Mr. Petrie in 2010 was not disabled as badly as perhaps we thought he was at the time, and could have testified in a wheelchair and come to the courthouse. So the continuance was denied, and we're saying that that was error as well. The funny thing about the case was that Detective Cheryl Holman, and one of the main points that I'd like to present is that the first amended and the first pleadings, the state stated that these were witnesses that they intended to call, and Mr. Petrie was named as a witness that they intended to call. Therefore, it was not necessary that the defense issue a subpoena. The state said they intended to call a witness. The first time we found out that Mr. Petrie was not going to testify was after the jury was selected, and at that time we found out that the state believed him to be sick or disabled to some extent, and therefore they were not going to call him. It was a matter of surprise at that time, and we asked immediately that we wanted to subpoena him and bring him before the court. The court at that time did not conduct any other inquiry, and as a result, he said, yes, you can go ahead and subpoena him. As a result, we're asking the court to reverse this case because of the strong law and long precedent of attachment of a witness and compulsory process under the constitutional provisions I have cited. Do y'all have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Mackey.
May it please the court, counsel. The state will rely on its fact statement that was submitted with the state's brief. And I would respectfully remind this court that the standard of review in every one of these points of error is abuse of discretion. The onus is on appellant to show that the trial judge acted with complete disregard to any guiding rules or principles, and he has not done that here. Appellant has not provided any evidence or authority that the trial court abused its discretion by by denying an open-ended continuance that was requested during trial. Appellant has not provided any evidence that the trial court abused its discretion by denying a writ of attachment on a witness that defense counsel, the defense investigator, and the state all agreed was too sick to show up.
But that doesn't really, the fact that he's sick doesn't make his testimony any less relevant or any less material.
And I'm going to state, Your Honor. In point of error one, the appellant argues that that he was precluded from raising self-defense by the absence of Mr. Petrie's testimony. This point of error was not preserved because, as I stated in my brief, there was no showing of materiality. Materiality, the testimony is material if it has a reasonable probability to cause a different outcome. Here that hasn't been shown. Whether Mr. Petrie testified or not, appellant was not going to have self-defense available to him without his testimony. Central, crucial to a self-defense claim is the defendant's state of mind. There is nothing in the record that says anything about his state of mind. The only physical man.
How would he know?
I'm sorry?
How would he know?
That's exactly the state's point. How would Mr. Petrie know? So even had he testified, there would still be no evidence of the defendant's state of mind, and they could not raise self-defense.
You're saying that there's never been a case where self-defense was raised unless the defendant testified?
Not at all. What I'm saying is in this case, he couldn't do it. If there is physical manifestations that support a self-defense claim, but in this case we don't have that. We have somebody coming out from behind a counter, advancing on somebody else. When somebody tried to stop him, that other person got pushed out of the way. He advanced. He made aggressive moves. There is nothing in the record that would support a self-defense claim here.
But couldn't Mr. Petrie have provided that?
I don't see how Mr. Petrie could testify to the appellant's state of mind.
He could have testified as to what he looked like, how he was advancing, what his facial expressions were, all circumstantial evidence that would be relevant to Mr. Roberts' state of mind, how he appeared, what tone of voice he was speaking in. Aren't those all circumstantial evidence if he was being of his state of mind?
That is, but that's the appellant in this case hasn't made any allegation that he would have. The only allegations that he made, that appellant made in his bill of exception, was that Mr. Petrie would testify that he raised his cane. He doesn't say in an aggressive manner or a defensive manner, totally silent on how he raised his cane. And
but how could he say that when he hadn't had the opportunity to cross-examine Mr. Petrie? I mean, wouldn't it all
be? He had two years to secure this witness. If he found out within that 2 years that he was too sick, he could have deposed him. He had 2 years. Let's not forget that this indictment was handed down in 2009.
You say that in your brief, and you say that he didn't try to take his deposition or didn't try to use closed circuit method of testifying, but you cite to no authority that I saw that he had any obligation to do that. Do you have any authority for that argument?
I'm not saying that he is obliged to. What I'm saying is he could have and never even looked into it. And now he's asking you to overturn the trial court when the trial court, the trial judge's hands were bound.
How's that?
I'm sorry. The trial judge was asked during trial for a continuance. He has no obligation to grant that. The trial judge was...
Well, if the witness doesn't, you're not going to know whether a witness is going to comply with a subpoena until the middle of trial, correct?
But he had 2 years to subpoena that witness, and he subpoenaed that witness during trial.
It didn't matter whether he subpoenaed him 2 years before or on the day of trial. You still don't know until he's ordered to be there whether he's going to be there or not.
That's correct.
Okay, so what difference does that make?
Because there's no showing of diligence on his part when he's making these requests during trial.
Do you have any authority that says you waive your Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution because you didn't use due diligence in subpoenaing 2 years ahead of time?
If you're referring to the right to compel a witness, they have to make a showing that the testimony would be favorable. They didn't make that showing.
That wasn't my question, sir.
I guess I misunderstand your question, Your Honor.
My question is, do you have any authority for your proposition that you waive your Sixth Amendment right by not using due diligence by subpoenaing a witness far ahead of time versus the day of trial?
No, ma'am, I do not. But I would reiterate that there is no Sixth Amendment violation because there was not any showing of favorability of Mr. Petrie's testimony, which there must be a showing, and there wasn't. What they showed was that Mr. Petrie would say that he raised his cane. Again, it doesn't say whether it was in an aggressive or a defensive pose.
Is that same testimony from the investigator raised his cane and was pushed from the back?
Yes, sir. And that he was pushed from the back, I don't think there's any way that you can spin being shoved from behind into testimony that's in any way favorable to the defendant. And
wouldn't that be for the jury to decide? But if they can't hear it, they can't decide.
But this is actually a showing of favorability must be made to the judge if the judge is denying this. And these things were not shown to the judge. What was shown to the judge was that there would be testimony that he raised his cane, that he was pushed from behind, and when the investigator was asked if the evidence would be favorable to the defense, the investigator didn't say yes or no. He said it would be fair to both sides. That is not favorable. Favorable means advantageous. Fair does not. As far as the points of error 2 and 3, with the requesting of the continuances, again, the state's position is there was not diligence shown in subpoenaing the witnesses or in requesting the continuances. And appellant could not say when either of the witnesses would be available. As such, there is no showing of abuse of discretion. Appellant hasn't provided any authority that says the judge has to grant an open-ended continuance request that's made during trial. And as far as the witness list goes, the state is under no obligation to provide witnesses for the defense. Never has been. A subpoena list is available to the lawyers if there is a witness that is not on that list that he wants to elicit testimony from. Appellant has subpoena power for just that reason. If he wants to tell his side of the story with his witnesses, he can subpoena them. In this case, he didn't. He did after trial had already begun. Again, the state's position, there's no showing of favorability or materiality of Mr. Petrie's testimony. There was no showing of diligence in trying to subpoena or request a continuance. There's no showing of abuse of discretion when a judge doesn't grant an open-ended continuance. And there's no showing of an abuse of discretion for a judge not granting a writ of attachment on a witness that everybody has agreed is too sick to testify. And I would reiterate that. Well, if there are any more questions, I'm sorry. I'll concede the rest of my time to the court. Thank you.
Mr. Mackey, rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you deal, Mr. Mackey, with the pushed-from-behind statement, which seems to say, so what if he raised his cane, he got hit from behind, couldn't be threatening somebody behind him with his cane?
Well, the fact was our private investigator did not question him extensively about it nor ask him just how that occurred. It could have occurred in several different ways in that he tried, maybe he even swung, I don't know, but he held the cane up. At that time, when he was about to be shoved, he turned his back. I don't believe that would take away the right of self-defense in that situation, since that arose when Mr. Petrie came back into the store and aggressively approached Mr. Roberts, who was an employee, and had told him to please leave and to avoid it. The Sixth Amendment right to compulsory process is, in plain terms, a right to present a defense, the right to present the defendant's version of the facts, as well as the prosecution's to the jury, so that it may decide where the truth lies. Washington versus Texas is a very important case because we all have that right. But this right goes even further, since it protects the right to confront and cross-examine each and every witness. If Mr. Petrie had been cross-examined, I submit to the court, it's speculation, but he would have probably admitted that, yes, he was aggressive, that he did, in the provocation, that he did threaten, as well as Mr. Roberts, between the two, and that he was approaching him with the very intent he might have, under cross-examination, had to admit, yes, I raised the cane. And when asked the question, why did you raise the cane? There was only one answer that he could truthfully give and the credibility judge before the jury, and that was, I was about to hit him. And then he would have had to admit, yes, if you hit him on the head, you could have knocked him out, caused a concussion, knocked teeth out, and you used deadly force. And that Mr. Roberts, as an employee, had no weapon at all, just his bare hands. I think Mr. Roberts showed great constraint in what he did, though we don't like what happened, obviously. I don't believe that it caused any serious bodily injury, even with the medical records they submitted to the court, and also the son testified as to Mr. Petrie's condition. We're sorry this obviously happened, but at the same time, I think the jury could have taken all of this evidence of the cane and so forth and realized that perhaps the state had not proven his case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Do I recall that there was testimony that Mr. Roberts pushed a customer out of the way to get to Mr. Petrie?
My recollection, and I read this transcript last night, I did not find that there. The customers in the video were around the cashier's desk over here. Mr. Petrie came in, and the confrontation occurred off the video. There was a manager of the store who was there, and he admitted, as we put in our brief, that he didn't see everything. It's a funny thing about it is that they were friends, we submitted, and that he really didn't want to testify against Mr. Petrie because Mr. Petrie was a very good customer of the store. The state said in their witness list that we intend to call Bobby Petrie. We intend to call Cheryl Walmack. At the time when we asked for those witnesses, they were not there. We issued subpoenas. I think Detective Walmack was off in Colorado. As far as I know, that when the state here in Tarrant County says that we have a witness available to you, they'll do everything they can to find the witness and have the subpoena issued. And there was impeaching evidence, which was which would have damaged this prosecution's case. Cross-examination, I submit, would have brought out many of these items to supply the issue of self-defense in the court's charge and to present it to the jury. As of such, the state argued, which caused great harm to Mr. Roberts' case, that he was not threatened in any way or there was any aggressive action. We could subpoena all the state's witnesses when they give us a witness list. We could do it 2 years ahead of time. I don't think the district judges would tolerate that, especially in a court-appointed case. However, when it came up that the state was not calling Mr. Petrie at the beginning of the trial, after the jury was selected, after we found out they did not intend to call him, it raised red flags, and we said, we need to issue a subpoena, and we need to bring him. And sure enough, as the evidence showed, Mr. Petrie was a vital defense witness who was not allowed to testify, and I also asked that that statement be brought in as admission of penal, against penal interest against Mr. Petrie. The judge almost told me, no, there's no way right in front of the jury. As I was asking a question, can I bring it up?
Thank you, Mr. Mackey. Thank you. Your case is submitted. You are free to go about your business, and the clerk will adjourn court for today.